As It Was by Tuesday Love Sang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 11. It was good to be back in Canada, to get what was then a reliable mail service. There had been quite a lot of trouble in Uruguay, and one particular incident which really made me foam with fury was when, as an author, I had a lot of mail sent to me, and the post office in Montevideo would not let me have it. I had my adopted name, and I also had the name under which I wrote, T. Lovesang Rampa. And the post office officials in Montevideo were quite adamant in not letting me have mail for two names. Their idea was that a person must be a crook if they had to have two names, and so I gave the matter much thought and came to the conclusion that I was far better known as T. Lovesang Rampa. Then I went to the post office and said I wanted the mail for T. Lovesang Rampa, and they could retain the rest. Then they had to see my papers. My papers had the wrong name on them, so I was unable to get my mail. Eventually I had to go to a lawyer, an abogado, and have a change of name deed drawn up. It had to be done legally, and there were many, many stamps on the document, after which notice had to be given in an Uruguayan legal newspaper all about the name change. When all those formalities were completed, then I could get mail in the name of T. Lovesang Rampa, but I was forbidden to use the other name. Now, of course, my name has been legally changed in Canada as well to T. Lovesang Rampa. And while we're on the subject of officialdom, bureaucracy, etc., etc., I'm now a Canadian subject. I took out Canadian naturalization, and here again, the formalities were truly amazing. But there seem to be formalities in everything nowadays. I've been trying to get the old age pension, to which I am entitled, but bureaucracy is such that apparently I cannot get it, or so the officials tell me, unless I give the exact address and the exact dates of arriving and leaving every place I've been in Canada. Well, I have been to an amazing number of places, from Windsor to Prescott, to Montreal, St. John, New Brunswick, Halifax, all the way on to Vancouver, back to Calgary, etc., etc., and I should have thought that I was well enough known as a Canadian citizen and with the passport, etc., etc., but apparently that does not suit the bureaucracy mad officials. So, the matter is still pending. It sounds more like a rotten apple than anything else, doesn't it? Last night I was very unwell indeed, and late in the night I awakened from an uneasy doze and found clustered around me a group of those who were my associates, lamas from Tibet. They were in the astral, and they were agitating for me to get out of the body and go over and discuss things with them. "What is the matter with you all?" I asked. "If I feel any worse than I do now, I shall be over there permanently." The lama, Mingyar Dondup, smiled and said, "Yes, that's what we are afraid of. We want you to do something else first." When one has done astral travel for as many years as I have, there's nothing to it. It is easier than stepping out of bed, so I just slipped out of this body and went into the astral. Together, we walked to the side of a lake on which there were many water birds playing. Here in the astral, you know, creatures have no fear whatever of man, so these birds were simply playing in the water. We sat on a moss-covered bank, and my guide said, "You know, Lobsang, there isn't enough detail given about transmigration. We wanted you to say something about peoples who have used transmigration." Well, the day in the astral was too pleasant to be much of a cross-patch, so I indicated that on the morrow I would get to work again before the book was finished. It was very pleasant, though, being in the astral, away from pain, away from worries and all the rest of it. But, as I was reminded, people do not go to Earth for pleasure. They go because they've something to learn or something to teach. Today, then, is another day, the day when I have to write something even more about transmigration. In the days of Atlantis, and oh yes, there really was Atlantis, it's not just a figment of a writer's imagination. Atlantis was real. But in the days of Atlantis, there was a very high civilization indeed. People walked with gods. The gardeners of the earth were ever watching developments on Atlantis. But those who are watched are wary of the watchers, and so it came about that the gardeners of the earth used the process of transmigration so that they could keep a more subtle form of watch. A number of bodies of suitable vibrations were used by the spirits of gardeners, and then they could mingle with humans and find out just what the humans really thought of the gardeners, and were they plotting? The gardeners of the earth, who looked after that mysterious civilization known as the Sumerians, also had tutors come to the earth by transmigration. It was altogether too slow to have great spaceships cross the void, taking such a long time. By transmigration, it could be done in a matter of seconds. The Egyptians also were largely controlled and entirely taught by higher entities who entered into specially cultivated bodies, and when those bodies were not actually being used by the entities, they were carefully cleaned, wrapped up, and put aside in stone boxes. The ignorant Egyptian natives, catching brief glances of the ceremonies, came to the conclusion that the gardeners were preserving the bodies, and so those who had witnessed such proceedings rushed home to their priests and told all that they had seen. The priests then thought that they would try such things, and when a high enough person died, they wrapped him up in bandages, coated him with spices and all the rest of it, but they found that the bodies decayed. Then they came to the conclusion that it was the intestines, the heart, liver, and lungs, which caused the decaying. So all those parts were removed and put in separate jars. It's a good thing they were not preparing the hosts for incoming spirits, because the hosts would indeed have been a gutless lot, wouldn't they? Of course, some of the embalming, so-called, was when a sick spaceman or spacewoman was being put into the state of suspended animation so that he or she could be removed to a spaceship and taken elsewhere for treatment. There have been quite a number of well-known leaders on this earth who were entities transmigrated into earth bodies. Abraham, Moses, Gautama, Christ, and then that well-known genius of geniuses, Leonardo da Vinci. The inventions of Leonardo da Vinci are legend, and he enhanced the knowledge of this world very, very greatly. He, as I suppose anyone would agree, possessed skills and sciences far beyond the knowledge of Earth people. The person known as Leonardo da Vinci had been an illegitimate child without any special advantages. Who knows, he might have even been the son of a plumber. The body of the person who became Leonardo da Vinci was of such a degree of vibration that a very high entity could take it over and do all those things which no human could have done. In all seriousness, I say that if the people of this world would only listen to those who can actually do transmigration, there would be a wonderful chance of space exploration. Think of all the worlds there are. Think of being able to visit a world in a matter of seconds. Some of the worlds can never be visited by orthodox humans because the atmosphere may be wrong, the climate may be wrong, or the gravity may be wrong. But when a person is doing transmigration, he can take over the body of any native of the planet, and so then can explore the planet without any difficulties whatsoever. Humans, well versed in the science of transmigration, could enter the bodies of animals so that they could be studied effectively. This has been done before. It has been done frequently before, and because of racial memory, there are certain false beliefs that humans are reborn as animals. They are not, ever. Nor are animals born as humans. Animals are not inferior to humans either. But because there is a racial memory of gardeners of the earth taking over the bodies of certain animals, the knowledge of that has lingered on in a distorted form. Thus it is that good religions are debased. We have traveled extensively in Canada. I have been from Windsor, Ontario, to Fort Erie, and so on to Prescott, and then we went to St. John, New Brunswick. For a time, as you can read in other of my books, we lived quite happily in New Brunswick, in the very pleasant city beside the sea. But as my accountant said, an author must travel. So we moved to Montreal, and we lived in Habitat for some time. Habitat is that funny-looking collection of houses piled one on top of the other, like children's building bricks. Anyway, it was quite a nice place to live, and, in fact, we liked it so much that after we had left it, we later returned to it. Here again, in Montreal, there were always strikes. There was a language difficulty, too, because the French Canadians were not at all friendly to those who did not speak French. And my own firm opinion has always been that Canada was an English-speaking country, and I refused to speak French. Soon came the time when we moved again, this time to Vancouver, British Columbia, where we lived in a hotel. Actually, a hotel which also had apartments to it. Vancouver has gone down a lot lately under what I consider to be a most horrible form of government. And another complaint against Vancouver is that no pets was the sign everywhere. And as one hotel keeper once said, pets had never hurt his business, but children had, and so had drunks, and so had people who smoked in bed and set the place on fire. I have moved about a lot in my life. I have learned much, and there are certain things I wish could be. I wish, for instance, that there could be a censorship of the press, because I have seen so much misery caused by inaccurate press reports. I am glad to note that now many more people are obviously agreeing with me on this, because the accuracy of the press is often in doubt nowadays. The predictions made about me so very, very long ago have been utterly accurate. It was predicted that even my own people would turn against me. Well, they have indeed, because in my time of trouble, no one came forward to help me or to attest the truth of my story, and true that story is. I had so many hopes about helping Tibet. I thought, for example, that with recognition I would be able to speak for Tibet before the United Nations. I had hoped that with recognition I could have had a radio program about free Tibet, but no help whatever has been given to me by the people of Tibet, who have left that country. Sadly enough, it is their loss as well as mine. So much good could have been done. My name is widely known. It has been conceded that I can write. It has been stated also that I can talk. I wanted to use both in the service of Tibet. Yet they have not been at all anxious to recognize me. Just the same as in the past, a Dalai Lama would not recognize the Panchen Lama, and vice versa. It is just the same, we will say, as one political leader ignoring the existence of another. But I get a vast number of letters on this day, for example. I had 103. It has often been much more, and the letters come from all over the world. I learn things which are closed to many, and I have been told, rightly or wrongly, that the present people who escaped from Tibet cannot recognize me, because another religious faction who is helping them would be cross. I have all the evidence that that is so, actually. But, well, there's no point in starting a miniature religious war, is there? It is mainly the lower orders of refugees who seem to be opposed to me. I had a letter some months ago from an important man who had been to see the Dalai Lama and had discussed me. The Dalai Lama, it was reported to me, had extended an invitation to me to return to the Potala when it was freed from communist aggression. And just a few weeks back, our adopted daughter, we name no names, remember? Received a letter saying that the Dalai Lama was very concerned about Dr. Rampa's health and the Dalai Lama was praying for him daily. That letter is now in the possession of my publishers. Another wish I have is this. There are quite a number of occult bodies about, some of them claiming to be very ancient, even though they were started again by an advertising man just a few years ago. But my complaint is this. If all these people are so holy, so good, so devoted to spiritual enlightenment, then why cannot we all get together? Because if they are truly genuine, they would realize that all paths lead home. A number of students from some of these cult colleges have asked me why I did not get in touch with group so-and-so or group something or other, and the answer is that I have done, and I have had some shockingly insulting replies from these groups, all because they are jealous or because they've been poisoned by the press. Well, I do not see it that way at all. I maintain that it does not matter what religion one belongs to. It does not matter how one studies the occult. If people are genuine, they would be able to work together. Some years ago, I was approached by a man who was the founder of a so-called Tibetan science. He wrote to me and suggested that we could make a lot of money if I joined with him and he used my name. Well, I do not do things like that. I do not go in for this work as a money-making gimmick. My beliefs are my everyday beliefs, and I live according to the code under which I was taught. I would like to see many of these so-called metaphysical societies or orders licensed after careful examination. So many of them are fakes, just out to gather money. I know of one particular group who admit quite freely that they take what they consider to be the best from a whole load of writers and hash it up as something quite different. Well, that is dishonest. This is a good opportunity to tell you once again, in case you start at the back end of this book instead of the front, as so many do, that all my books are absolutely true. Everything that I have written is fact. Every metaphysical experience I write about, I can do. And it is my most sincere wish that there will come a time when people will indeed recognize the truth of my books, because I still have a lot to teach people. Nowadays, because of the lies propagated by the press, I've been treated as a leper or a pariah. Many people dip into my books and then write things as if it was their own idea. Some time ago, I listened with great satisfaction on short waves to a long extract from one of my books, and then at the end of the reading, I was almost stunned to hear that authorship had been ascribed to some woman who can hardly sign her name. Believe me, then, all my books are true, and I believe I have the system whereby peoples of this world can visit other worlds in safety. I want to thank Mrs. Sheila M. Rouse, who has typed 15 of these books. I typed the first one, and she has typed them without a groan, too. Another thing in which you may be interested is this. Mrs. Rampa has now nearly completed a book giving her side of this entire affair. If you want to know about it, well, you will have to watch her advertisements, won't you? Or you can write to Mr. E. Zouter, A. Touchstone Limited, 33 Ashby Road, Loughborough, Leicester, England. And so ends Book 4, as it is now. End of Chapter 11 and the end of As It Is Now.